Now I would like to introduce our first speaker, Marie B., with 34 years of sobriety.
Good afternoon. My name's Marie, and I'm an alcoholic. And I don't know if I sound as loud to you as I sound to me, but you should be able to hear me like in Canoga Park. And I'm very self-centered still, so I would like to get part of this out of the way. I want to especially thank both my sponsor and my sponsee for showing up this afternoon to support me. You know, it brings to me the remembrance that, you know, there's always someone here to lead us, and that if we're lucky, we always still get to be a leader. So, and I always wanted to be the leader. And those of you who know me well know that. Anyway, I'm going to try to keep my drunkalogue really extra short since we don't have a lot of time today. And I think I can do that by explaining to you that, you know, no matter how you drank or where you drank or what you drank, we all basically drank the same. And that was that we drank all that we could whenever we could. And we did that until we couldn't do it anymore. And that's how it was for me. And the other thing was that if it was really, really important that I be sober, it was really, really impossible. And so I'd like to share with you my favorite story of that impossibility. So it's the early 70s, and I've applied for a job to be a telephone installer with the local phone company. And when you're 18, and that's how old most of the guys were, 30 is like ancient. So see, I'm this ancient old lady, and I'm going to go down to pole climbing school. Now you would think this would be something that one would, like, you know, eat good and get lots of sleep, but no, I went on a 3-day bender, and I woke up on that Monday morning. It was an extremely warm November day here in the San Fernando Valley, and I was extremely hungover, so I had a couple bottles of beer and a little mouthwash, and I got in my car and I drove down to pole climbing school. Now, it was going to be over 100 degrees that day, so they gave us salt tablets. And I want you to know that I climbed up and down that pole all day with those guys. The only difference was that often when I came to the bottom, I had to go into the bathroom and throw up. And I want you to know I blamed it on the salt tablets. So if you drank like that, you're probably in the right place. I tried everything to make my... the hole in my stomach. I didn't know I was alcoholic. I didn't know I had alcoholism. I just knew I had a hole in the stomach. And so I tried to fix it with things, you know, and some of those things were a husband. So I got married thinking that would make things better. It made them different. So then I had babies. That also made things different, but, you know, it didn't fix the hole in my stomach. And when my children were very, very young, my husband threatened to divorce me and take my children, and that was my catalyst to check into a care unit on January 21st of 1980. Now, I want you to know I didn't go to that care unit to get sober one day at a time, to come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and to be here 34 years and a week later as a speaker. I just went there to get that old man off my back so that when we got divorced, I would get the house and the kids. That was my, you know, luckily for me, God had a completely different plan for my life. Now, I want you to know I only spent 28 days in that 21-day program, and that's because they explained to me that some were sicker than others. You know, when they pulled me in to explain that to me, it was kind of like being pulled into the principal's office. And so I bartered with them. I told them that I would stay the extra week if they would let us have a Valentine's Day party in the unit, because I'm a party person, right? Now, to this day, I have no idea why they said yes, but they did. And we had cupcakes and that really awful red punch you serve your kids, your little kids at parties. And we had a record player, tells you how that we're really long-timers. We had a record player and some records. And I share this because I want you to know I learned something very valuable that Valentine's Day in 1980. I learned that I could dance without having alcohol in my body. And I want you to know that before I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't know I could do anything without having alcohol in my body. As a matter of fact, if I installed your telephone service for you in the 70s, I may owe you an apology, because we didn't do that sober either. So as I'm leaving this care unit, I overhear the therapist saying, we really shouldn't let her go. I don't give her 24 hours on the street. And I know today the reason they didn't give me 24 hours was because I was yet to admit to my innermost self that I was alcoholic, let alone powerless, or that my life was unmanageable. You know, but I have this defect of character. I still have it today. It's, I'll show you, you SO, you know what. If you can do it, I can do it. And I remember telling that counselor that when I had a year of sobriety, I would come back and get him and he could give me a cake at Platt. And I want you to know I did that. And I want you to know that at 10 years, he was in private practice and I went and found him to let him know I was still sober. But by the time I was 20 years, I had let go absolutely. Or at least, at least that defect. There's a lot of other defects. So, you know, the thing that really saved my bottom in Alcoholics Anonymous was a couple of things. One, it took me a long time to figure out that I was really an alcoholic and this is where I belong. But I was very fortunate, and that is that I didn't put alcohol in my mouth. So, you know, I think that's a really important part of recovery. We don't drink, you know, so that helps. You get to stay sober a long time by not putting alcohol in your body. And the other thing was I became of service very, very early in my sobriety. Actually, Carolyn Hoppenrath got her very first commitment in Alcoholics Anonymous from me. I think it was either folding letters or stuffing envelopes. But she was still in the care unit. But I used to go back to that care unit and drive patients. And I don't know what it is about this, but I want you to know that God always put the most irritating patients in my car. But you know, but I'm still here. And then when I was only a few months sober, I was elected co-secretary of a meeting in the valley here. And the lady who was elected secretary called me that week. And what she said was, I'm never ever going back to that meeting again and it's all yours. And I want you to know I took that very literally. And I became dictator of a small meeting here in the San Fernando Valley. Now, and by dictator, I want to explain that to you really quick. Dictator, not only was I the secretary and the treasurer and the cake lady and the literature person, and I think I let Carolyn and Bob make coffee, though, and but what made me dictator was I didn't hold elections, you know? After about 14 months of that, a gentleman who's sitting in this room today came up to me and explained that leadership in Alcoholics Anonymous is rotational and suggested we have elections. But I'm very controlling, so I want you to know that the entire time I still lived here in the San Fernando Valley, almost 29 years, I always made sure that meeting had elections every 6 months. Because some of us just can't let go, you know. Eventually, I figured it out. Oh my God, I'm alcoholic. That big book applies to me. How could I have been so dumb? You know, that's the thing. I look today, and I look at my behavior when I was drinking, and I look at the big book, and I think about what I thought back then, and it's just unfathomable to me that I would have thought that my lifestyle was normal. But I can guarantee you I didn't see anything wrong with the way I lived before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I've been here a lot of years, and I've had to do what other people in alcoholics have had to do in order to stay here. You know, I had to work the steps, every one of them. And you know, when I got to that step that says, humbly ask God to remove our shortcomings, my prayer was slightly different. It was, dear God, please remove my shortcomings, except this one, which happens to do with men, except this one, because you don't understand, I'm different, and I can continue this bad behavior, and I'll be okay. And I want you to know that although I wasn't willing to have that defect of character removed, God did remove it from me. Sometimes slowly, sometimes quickly, but it will always materialize. And I'm not texting anybody, I'm just trying to watch my time because all these people have way more sobriety than I do. You know, I've done a lot of service in Alcoholics Anonymous, and like I said, it's been one of the mainstays of my program, you know, but I was a real showrunner. You know, I did not want to be the lady mopping the floor or washing the coffee cups. I wanted to be in control. And I'm slightly better today, 34 years later. I'm not really great, but I'm on a convention committee now in San Diego where I live, and I have no desire to ever be the convention chairperson, so I must have grown a little. Some of the best time I've spent in Alcoholics Anonymous has been doing hospital and institutional work. You know, and I've done things from what I call lightweight panels, that's like going to Burbank Hospital where all the high bottom drunks with insurance and stuff go to get sober, to have the 4-yard in Tehachapi, where they explained to me, Marie, these are not sick people trying to get well, these are bad men. And if you've never been there, in that room where they hold the meeting in Tehachapi, the walls go up 2 stories on both sides, and the top layer is plexiglass, has little round holes in it, and there are guards with 9mm through those holes through the entire meeting. You know, and the sponsor said to me, you know what, Marie, if they start firing, just stay still because they're really good shots. But I want you to know I learned a lot on the 4-yard in Tehachapi. I learned that happy, joyous, and free is an inside job. Because I can tell you that those men in that prison who had found AA and the program of recovery were happy, joyous, and free even inside those 4 walls. You know, and that's when I learned that the things I wanted when I first got here, like a big house south of Ventura Boulevard, were not the solution. So I want you to know that today I have a small home, but I'm south of the boulevard, about 140 miles. Finally made it south of the boulevard, guys. You know, I also took panels. The scariest place I ever took a panel, Alcoholics Anonymous, is the psych wards. You know, I'd never been in one, but I tell you, carrying the message to the criminally insane was a really scary thing. But God and the book tell me that I can carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous anywhere with impunity. And, you know, that's always been true for me. You know, I also dabbled in this convention for a lot of years. I came here following a pair of tight jeans. In my early sobriety, like the first 16 or 17 years, I went a lot of places following a pair of tight jeans. It just is my story. You know, the reason I'm still sober is because none of those tight jeans followed me. You know, it just is what it is. You know, it is what it is. I worked in central office, you know, and I've done a lot of cooking in Alcoholics Anonymous. If you haven't heard of the cooking and dishwashing plan of recovery, Sarah will be glad to explain to you how washing dishes can get you sober and keep you here. You know, I'm really grateful to Carolyn for asking me to share on this panel. I can tell you that, you know, 34 years ago when I was sitting in that care unit trying to explain to them how to run a program of recovery, that I never had envisioned that all of the things that have passed for me would come to be the way they are. You know, they say when you get here, if you write a list, you know, of what you expect in the first 5 years, you'll be shortchanged. Well, I can tell you if you write a list when you're 30, you'll still have shortchanged yourself when you hit 34. And thank you all for being here.
Thank you, Marie. I followed her in here, and I stayed too. Our next speaker is Don L.
My name is Don. I'm an alcoholic. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous by way of the courts for many, many years. The first time I was sentenced was in 1960, and then all through the 60s, different judges sentenced me to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't drink before the meetings. I never got any sobriety. I did get 21 days one time at a place called The Nest. And they didn't have a 21-day chip, so that was the end of that. But I got sober finally by the last time I was sentenced. I was sentenced to 180 days in jail. And the judge suspended my sentence on condition I go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I did come, and I made one big change. And for me, I'll always be grateful. Because I wouldn't bring out the court card. That way you wouldn't know I was sentenced by the courts. Because, yeah, I used to get smart-ass remarks from people that didn't have to come by way of the courts, you know. They came on their own, right? So I didn't bring out the court card, and I went to meetings, but I still drank. Not as often. And that was, I was sentenced in January 1970. And in April of 1970, I finally got a sobriety date, right? I've had many sobriety dates over the years, right? But April 4th is my sobriety date. And in 1971, I met a guy named Louis. And Louis was your speaker here a few years ago on Saturday night. And Louis and I had boxing in common. And I used to go up to the state prison at Tehachapi, and he had two boys. One was 10, one was 12, and they went up and boxed for me up there. And so I got acquainted with the Louis. And there are, I think, six. And Louis was the first one I met. Then Bobby and Dickie and... I was saving Lardy for last because Artie, I met him when he was still inside up at Tehachapi. And Artie just passed away Friday. Yeah, and one of the lawyers is here now. And it just, at least he got a chance at sobriety time and time again. And I had that same chance at sobriety and didn't grab onto it for years. Anyway, I just wanted to say that. I don't know what else to say. I tell you what, I had to get help getting up the two steps. I really don't know that I'm old. But I can't get up two steps, right? I need a cane. I'm 80 years old, right? And I don't look it, I know it. And a few months ago, the Veterans Administration told me to stand up. And I stood up, and they said, now stand on one leg. I couldn't do it. I said, stand on the other leg. I couldn't do that either. And they said, you're wobbly. That's not funny. Anyway, they said, we're going to give you a cane. I said, no, you're not. I don't need no cane. I don't want a cane. And they mailed me one anyway. And you know, standing out there waiting for the door to open, I'm wobbly. And I don't feel wobbly. I am, but I don't feel it. I feel young. Like I have not had a drink now in 43 and a half years. My birthday is April 4th. And I'm looking forward to that, right? Because I know I'm going to be here. It's all I know. You know, I know a lot of people in the room here. And before the thing, we were out there and people to give me their phones, their watches and everything to put down save seats, right? So I saved a whole bunch of seats. And nobody came in, right? They all went elsewhere to other tables. So, you know, I tried. Now, my message today for me and for you, I hope, is that I'm sober and you are too, and I hope you stay.
Thank you, Don. This time I'd like to introduce Mary Ellen. She's 36 years old, and I thank her.
I'm kind of like Marie, I've got a loud voice. They don't usually give me a microphone. My name is Mary Ellen, and I am grateful to be here, and I am an alcoholic. And before I get into my self-centered, selfish little talk here, I'd like to thank Carolyn and the rest of the committee for inviting me back to what was my home several years ago. For those of you who are old enough to remember or have heard about 4343 Radford, I'm a Radfordite. I come from the class of 1977. My sobriety date is March 16. I'll be 37, God willing, in a little over a month. What I'd like to say here is that my trek in Alcoholics Anonymous kind of started in the San Fernando Valley Convention. I was 12 days sober. I had, who said they had a lot of sobriety days? I had two. I had January 21, 1977, skyrocketed to physical, emotional, and spiritual wellness, and proved it by drinking in March. So let's try this again. My sobriety date is March 16. But during the first part of that, January 21, the people that were trying to help me had had it with me. I was tore up from the floor up. I was not sober. Barbara was telling us that she remembered exactly what she wore to her first meeting. People have told me what I did and said and wore to my first meeting, like shoes that didn't match and a bloody shirt that had wine stains coming through it, and my hair burned to the back of my head, and no eyelashes and no eyebrows, and second-degree burns, and I wasn't sober. And I stood up in the middle of the room and I said, "You guys are driving me nuts. I need a drink. And all you keep talking about is a sponsor and a big book. So I'll make you a deal. You give me one of each and I'll get out of your hair." If you're new, I don't suggest you try that. It doesn't go over real well. It took me about 4 days to get the alcohol out of my system. They told me to keep coming back, so I went back to the same place, and they wouldn't let me in a men's stag. And, you know, I thought they had absolutely no understanding. And eventually, I got on everybody's last nerve. And so they sent me over to the Universal Sheraton, to the 1977 San Fernando Valley Convention. It was the second year. And if you think I am not grateful to be at this podium 34 years later, it isn't the same as being at any other podium. I have spoken at other meetings. I'm not a circuit speaker, but I do talk around areas and towns and stuff like that. But this one is special. For those of you that are new, that are wondering how in the world do you ever get up on this stage, kind of like what somebody said, you don't drink, you do the steps. And I actually am not like my new friend Marie here. I actually was so grateful to wash the ceramic cups at the old Radford Clubhouse. That was before Styrofoam. And I was so gullible, I was such a sponge. Somebody told me that for every cup I washed, I'd get a day of sobriety. So I would go, I wouldn't even attend the meetings. I'd go to Radford to wash the cups. So I figure I'm good till about 3175. And then they took it away from me. They wouldn't let me do it anymore, and they handed me a mop. I was promoted. You know, I was really not one of the weller ones. But the reason that you have, some of you may think you have seen me before in your nightmares. I was once again privileged by the San Fernando Valley heavy hitters in Alcoholics Anonymous to be on the grand reopening panel at the New Radford Hall. And that was 3 or 4 years ago. And if I look familiar to you, yes, it was me. And yes, I owe the whole San Fernando Valley an apology for something I said at the microphone. So if you don't know what I'm talking about, it's okay, don't worry about it. But yeah, it was me. I was so embarrassed, there was 4,000 people in the room and I just turned my back. I just turned at the wall. But anyway, you can do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous. I am privileged to say I'm here with one of my sponsees. I've been with her almost since the beginning. And she didn't even ask me. I told her she needed to do the fourth step and I was going to be her sponsor until she finished it. and she could fire me later. That reminds me of a young lady we met last night. And the reason I said I wanted to help the sponsee that's with me is that last night when we were exiting the meeting, there was a young lady standing over here by the door. Excuse me, alcoholics never stop drinking, they just stop drinking alcohol. And she was hanging back from the side, back of the door, and I looked into her eyes and I looked into her soul, and she was in so much pain, and I saw myself. I didn't know her, I didn't know anything about her. All I knew is I recognized the pain of a sick and suffering alcoholic. And so we went up and thanked the speaker, and she was walking down this little hallway, and I ran after her. I grabbed Cindy and I said, come on. And we went there and we stopped her in the hallway. And I just tried to calm her down, and she started crying. And I cried for the first 7 or 8 years of my sobriety. But I recognized the pain of the sick and suffering alcoholic. I still recognize the pain. I recognized it in Sandy. I recognized it in the stranger last night. She said she'd be here today, and I don't know or care if she is. All I'm trying to tell you is that this thing works because it's one alcoholic passing it on to another. And much like all of you, I am in service. I love my sponsees. I go to the end of the world for my sponsees. I will go to hell and back for you if you want to stay sober. But if you're going to drink, you can go to hell alone. And don't laugh, Bob. I got to get off of here because we got to leave the longest long timer. He said, talk for a while, and I can just stand up and say my name and sit down. But I'd like to just a little bit about what it's like now, and I'm not trying to bring tears to anybody's eyes, but I just, if you are thinking that there's nothing more to Alcoholics Anonymous than meetings and steps, and that we're a glum lot, and you can't see the benefit of sponsorship, and you can't see the benefit of getting into the middle of the pack. If you think about it out in the wild, the coyotes and everything, they go after the stragglers on the edge. So if you're a straggler on the edge, may I recommend to you that you may want to think about getting in the middle of the pack. And I got in the middle of the pack, and I have stayed in the middle of the pack. And I haven't strayed from that pack. And it came to pay me huge dividends. In about 6 weeks, I will be marking the 1 year anniversary of the death of my husband. And he would have turned 38 on April 1 of last year. And we were going to keep going to the internationals until he could be in the lottery for the 40th, to be on the panel for 40 years at the internationals. And he didn't make it. But what I want to say here is that the women in Alcoholics Anonymous, the men that he sponsored, and the people in Alcoholics Anonymous that surrounded me during that time, try that in a bar. Go into a bar and tell somebody on November 1, hey, my spouse just got diagnosed with terminal cancer and she's probably got 3 months. And they say, here, honey, we'll buy you a drink. You say it to Alcoholics Anonymous, and you wind up with somebody bringing you food. There was somebody coordinating it. They'd call Becca. Becca would call me, find out what we wanted. They would bring it. She'd come over every Sunday with her arms full of food, so I didn't have to cook. I was the only caregiver. And they came 2 days before Eric died. They came to the house. He died in our house. And 2 days before that, 7 of his sponsees came to the house on a Wednesday night to relieve me so I could go to my sisters in sobriety meeting. And there was 250 people or more at his memorial. That's Alcoholics Anonymous, the part the newcomer doesn't see. That's Alcoholics Anonymous, the fellowship. And had I been one of those on the periphery, they would have seen a strange person's name in the obituary. They wouldn't have known me, and they wouldn't have known who he was, nor would they have cared. So I compare that, and I didn't drink. You know, when we think we gotta have a drink because our world is falling apart, I guarantee you, I have never felt any pain like the pain of losing a spouse. And if you want a reason to drink, it felt to me like that would be an okay one, and it never even occurred to me. Bob was there, he was part of the people we had at the memorial, and it's just an amazing program. And if you're new or nearly new and you think you can't do this, just wait, it will change. And they kept saying last night, don't leave before the miracle. But that's really true. Don't leave before the miracle. And I, as a whole, as an institution of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'd like to thank you for everyone who was there for me when I needed you. So the service we talk about pays back. It pays back in dividends that you can't spend. It pays back in dividends of the heart. And one of the things I'll say now, and I'll give it to Bob, is that my husband had a couple of things that he used to say, and one of them was, God can do anything but fail. Think about that. God can do anything but fail. And most of the time when he would pitch, that's what he would talk about. And he was a Vietnam vet that died as a result of Agent Orange. And he loved the vets. He absolutely adored the vets. And if there was a man that came into his world that was an alcoholic, then he was a vet, then he was a Vietnam vet, oh my goodness. You know, our house was full of these guys. And somewhere on the priority, I think he had AA, combat veteran Vietnam alcoholic men. Then we had sponsors, then we had job, then we had dog, and down here I think I rated about 8 or 9. But we had an AA household and it was beautiful. And for those of you who think you have to have a him or a her or you can't stay sober, got bad news and good news. I had been married and divorced when I came into this program. I was 2 years out of that marriage. And I never, ever, 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 ever was going to get married again. And I meant it. And I spent 17 years proving it. And God had a different plan for me. So now I'm 15 years sober, he's 17 years sober, and we get married in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, you'd think that would work, right? Let me tell you, you're still a selfish, self-centered alcoholic. And let me just say, we had a long suit of adrenaline. But at the end, you know, at the end it was worth it, and I would live every minute over again. But I'm just trying to tell you that if you really feel that you have to have a significant other to stay sober, may I suggest God? He's really a good one to have. All right? So thank you again for letting me be here, and I'm privileged to be here and to share the podium with these wonderful people. If you just don't drink, you too can be a long timer. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Mary Ellen. Last but not least, fourth and final speaker, Bob D. January, he took his 55th year cake.
Sure. I can tell you all I know in a minute and a half. You can't see the damn thing. My name's Bob. I'm an alcoholic. My wife bought me this beautiful watch for my 75th birthday. That was 7 years ago, and I can't see it. Okay, yeah, you just bump me when it's time to go.
Okay.
All right. Anyway, it's an honor and a privilege to be here. Big inconvenience, but that's okay. Just kidding. I heard a speaker say that one night. I thought it was kind of catchy. So. What an honor. Honest to God. You know, I could never imagine. See, I was a really low-bottom drunk. I love cowboy bars. When I was about 22, my dad said, "Son, you ought to find a nice girl and settle down." I said, "Pop, I'm looking every night. I go to the Palomino, the Ragdoll, the Naughty Pine, and just haven't found her yet." But I loved him because my theme song was Born to Lose. And man, you could play it on the jukebox over and over again, or if the guy with the guitar and the drummer was there, you could sing it all night long. Some years ago, a guy named Waylon Jennings wrote one called "I've Always Been Crazy, But It's Kept Me From Going Insane." And if you can identify like that, you and I have a lot in common, I'll tell you that. When Bob read chapter 5 and it said, "There are those who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders," I always raise my hand because my father threatened me once with going to Camarillo State Hospital if I didn't change my behavior. I think I was about 14 at the time, so things weren't going real well. I remember Clancy years ago, first time I ever heard him, I think it was a long time back, he said something about alcohol wasn't his problem, it was his answer. And I said, "Oh, this guy's crazy, probably not even an alcoholic." And I went along like that for years because when I came here, they said, "What's your number one problem, kid?" I said, "Hell, I don't know." You know, I raised my hand at a men's stag meet on Thursday night. I used to go to the Encino men's stag on Thursday night. I had about 3 months, I guess. I raised my hand, and you weren't called on. You gotta raise your hand. If they recognize you, fine. I raised my hand. He said, "Yeah." I said, "Some of my wife's friends don't think I'm an alcoholic." And he said, "Do you think you are?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, screw your wife's friends. Next question." And you didn't answer my question. Then one day I came home from work and she's in the garage crying and I said, "What's wrong?" She said, "The washing machine don't work." She's about 7 months pregnant with the second kid and the washing machine don't work and the water and power is calling about the bill we left when we left the last house. And I don't know what we're gonna do. So I go that night and I raise my hand, "What do you want?" And I said, "Well, I see these signs around some of these rooms. One of them is First Things First. And I don't know what the first thing is. The washing machine quit. The wife's pregnant again. We haven't got any insurance. And the water and power's chasing me. What's the first thing?" Next question. I said, "Wait a minute. You didn't answer my question." And he wouldn't. But the meeting after the meeting, I think more people, not just guys, more men and women have gotten sober because of the meeting after the meeting in the parking lot. This guy comes up to me after the meeting and he's got fingers as big as my hand and a real gravelly voice. And he did something I've never liked done to me. I didn't like it. He went like that. And, "Hey, kid, what's your number one problem, kid?" I said, "Hell, I don't know. Why do you think I asked?" He said, "Booze, kid. You take care of your number one problem, everything else will take care of itself." Well, I don't know. He's nuts. He was, really, but I said, "Okay." So then he introduced me to the guy that told him that. This guy's name was Al M. Marino. He's been dead a long time. And he was one of the original 34 members in the Los Angeles group, as was my father. They knew each other. And I used to go see Al all the time and talk to him. What I loved about Al was he didn't walk on water. He was real, you know. He would tell you if he had troubles. And I got a lot of lessons out of people like that. But I kept thinking about Clancy, and I realized after a while that alcohol was my answer too. You know, it kept the demons away. I don't know where the demons came from, whether I got them in the womb or sometime later, but I had a lot of demons, and alcohol took them away. I was able to go to sleep at night. If I went out and stole some beer at 16 or 17 and drank it, I slept all night. I wasn't afraid of everything. When I took my inventory, when Al took his inventory, he told me what was right on top was self-pity. He says, "What was yours?" I said, "Fear." He said, "Who are you afraid of?" I said, "Nobody." Well, not nobody, but it's not that kind of fear. Impending doom. Something bad's going to happen anytime, you know? And I felt that way all my life. Time I was a little kid, something was going to go wrong. And I blamed myself for whatever went wrong. I had self-appreciation about as big as plant life. And alcohol changed all that, made me feel pretty good. And I did a lot of stuff, you know. Most of us who drank did that. The guy was saying last night, you know, we don't have to tell war stories in meetings anymore, and I don't either. I agree. I think Marie said, "I drank enough to get here. If you want to see me later, I'll fill you in on the details." But so many things happen. I'll give you the math first. I'm 82, and I've been sober and active in AA for 55 years. And the most important part about that is that I'm that much whiskey away from being a newcomer. That's it, you know? We got today. I've heard and seen stories of people who have been here for a period of time and went out again, and coming back is a bear. It really is. And I've been here long enough, I think a lot of us have, to see people go out and try it and come back and say, it's great, you guys ought to do it. I've never met anybody that's gone out and tried it and come back and said, it's great, you ought to do it. We send out scouts once in a while, and they always come back with an arrow in their ass, you know. That's what happens. So I've been fortunate enough to stay here, and these other people have all talked about, my wife brings it up all the time. We live in a little community up in the high desert. Carolyn, you know, unfortunately she found us, not unfortunate for us, for her. What am I doing here in this place? Anyway, small meetings, not too many people there, and they just seem to come in for a little while and then go out for a little while, and come in for a little while and go out for a little while. And I sometimes tell them some of the things I do, and they say, you mean you drove all the way to Carlsbad, California to talk at a meeting? And I said, yeah. I did it on a Saturday night in December, this past December. There were four of us with over 50 years at the podium. We each talked about 15 minutes. Guy says, well, did you have to spend the night? I says, yeah, we bought a room at La Quinta Inn. Did they pay you? I said, no. We bought our own dinner. And the guy says, about a tank of gas? I said, yeah, about. Did they pay you? I said, yeah. He said, they did? How much? I said, you have no idea. You wouldn't believe me if I told you. Well, what did they pay you? I said, millions. You can't believe what they paid me. And he kept looking at me, and I it wouldn't do any good to say more. They just don't understand. But I see Don over here. I hope you don't mind if I steal this from him. He talks about the ABCs of Alcoholics Anonymous. Ashtrays, brooms, and chairs. Right? And I thought, man, I get that. We started going to a Friday night meeting when I was new at the Canoga Park Women's Club on Jordan and Valerio in Canoga Park. It was the Canoga Park Beginners Meeting. It meets on Platt still now. Is that the Platt meeting? Wherever it meets, the Friday night speaker meeting. It started there. It moved several places after that. But you had to have a year to lead a meeting. You had to have 2 years to be a secretary. And you had to be nominated by the steering committee to lead the meeting. It's a big deal. So I had a year. And you had to get your own speakers. They would help you if you wanted to get one, but they'd help you. So there was a lady there by the name of Maggie. Maggie had 9 years coming up, and she knew everybody. I mean, everybody. Everybody knew Maggie. She was all over, speaking everywhere, famous. And she wanted her speaker to be a guy that was on television every single morning of the world. He had a show called Queen for a Day. He's been gone a long time, so it doesn't matter about his anonymity. But he was going to be her speaker, and word got around. So there must have been 150 people there that night. And they had yet to invent styrofoam cups. They were China cups and saucers. So the meeting ends, and everybody's going out to the door, and this guy yells, Bob, you coming to the party? I said, what party? He says, Maggie's party at her house. I said, we haven't been invited. So we stayed there, the two of us, probably midnight, maybe a little after, washing all the cups and saucers, cleaning up the ashtrays, which we used to have in those days, sweeping, mopping the floor, putting all the chairs away, got out there. So I know it was after midnight. The next day, I went down to the Valley Club, and I'm sitting there having a cup of coffee with a guy, and he says, why weren't you at the party last night? I said, we had to stay and clean up. Anybody help you? I said, yeah, Pat and I did it all. He said, you had to do all that work? I said, yeah. He said, how did you feel about that? I said, privileged. He says, you must be crazy. I said, that's certifiable in certain circles. Some time back, but I said, I never thought they'd let me do that. I worked my way up to that. And I really felt that way. I was very grateful that they allowed me to do that because it made me, as other people have said, a part of. It made me a part of. And there was no questioning anything like that. When I was maybe 2 years, a guy says, how would you like to be on a speaker team? I said, great. What's a speaker team? He said, four or five of us go out to a meeting like in Burbank or Inglewood or someplace, and we all share for 10 or 15 minutes. I thought, man, that's great. I was telling, I'm on a speaker team. I'm on a speaker team with Robbie and these guys. So one day I stop in Charlie's, the guy, like his name was Charlie, stop in Charlie's patio furniture store. He says, what are you doing Saturday night, Bob? I said, I don't know. We're going up to Oxnard, Bob. I said, great, a speaker meeting, speaker team? He said, no, Bob, it's a listening team. He said, a friend of mine's speaking up there, and you need to hear him, so we're going. And I get in the car, Bob, we're going, okay. And one day they call me, I'm almost out of time, right?
No.
They call me, say yes. A guy called me one afternoon, I think I had maybe 5 years, something like that, I don't know. I got this phone call, it was about 3 in the afternoon, guy's in Palmdale. Now, there was no 14 freeway yet. This guy calls, he says, I got your name from somebody, we have a speaker meeting up here in Palmdale, and we don't have a speaker, could you possibly come up tonight and speak? I said, well, I don't speak, I just go with other people sometimes and do it. I've never spoken for a whole meeting. He said, well, can you get a friend to come along? And I said, well, I'll try. Where is it? And he gave me the address, and it was a house way the hell out in the desert somewhere. So I made calls, you know, I couldn't find anybody, I know some of you remember Jimmy, the Irishman, Jimmy Grant. Will it keep me sober one more day? I said, I think so. He said, let's go. So we go out to Palmdale. We do the meeting, we come home. Sometime after that, I don't know how long it was, I was sitting in the nest one day, and this guy says, Bob, do you speak at meetings? I said, no, not too much. Why? And he said, well, I'm the secretary of the motion picture group, and I'd like to know if you'd come down there sometime and speak. Now, I want to tell you, that was like playing the Palace. It was on Santa Monica Boulevard in West Hollywood, a place called Plummer Park, and it was called the Motion Picture Group. So time went along, and I finally called central office in L.A., and I said, this guy asked me to come and speak at the Motion Picture Group, and I haven't heard from him. Do they still want me? She said, I'll call the secretary and have him call you. So this guy called up one day, and he said, are you Bob? I said, yeah. He said, how many do you draw? I said, what do you mean? He said, we had Chuck C. last week, and he drew 400. I said, you don't really know who I am, do you? And he said, no. I said, I'm the guy they call when they can't get nobody else to go to Palmdale. So, what a hoot that was. So I went to the meeting, and I had this friend of mine in those days, Earl. He was my absolute best friend in AA, passed away many years ago, but Earl and I went everywhere together. He kind of looked like Edward G. Robinson, and he was a real live gangster, he was. And he had a cigar in his mouth all the time, talk like that. And I'll interrupt this just a minute. One night, the Thursday night men's stag, the topic was resentments. And on Friday, Earl always, he was an aluminum siding salesman, if that helps you figure this out. And one Friday, every Friday just about, he had everybody over to his house for lunch. And we're sitting, those of us, I was in sales too, and I'd go over there with these guys. And, you know, Bob, they were talking about resentments last night. And I said, that's right, Earl, they were. And he says, you know, Bob, I've never had a resentment. I said, I don't think I ever have either, Earl. He said, I despise people. I said, so do I. So Earl went with me that night. So they hedged their bet and got a lady speaker for 20 minutes ahead of me. And they called me up, and I'm walking up. Earl says, tell them how you got here, Bob. So I did. And I was never asked back to the motion picture group. Anyway, I got to tell you, it's been a real hoot. And I'm going to say something like Mary Ellen said, because it's important to me because of this convention. And I don't want your sympathy or tears either. A lot of you know about it, but I just have to tell you. 6 years ago last week, our oldest son died of a heart attack. And we had a celebration of his life, a little Santa Clarita. We had it out there at noon on the following, it was on a Friday, the following, not that next day, but the following Saturday, we had a celebration of his life out there. 140 people in a room for 100 people, but we got them in. And it lasted till about 4:30 in the afternoon. Some of the people here today were there. And when it was over, we all went back to the house. And maybe about 5 o'clock, my wife said, isn't the banquet tonight? And I said, yeah. She said, we got to go. I said, don't you want to stay here with your daughter-in-law? She said, no, we belong there. That's where we're supposed to be. So we came here. That was 6 years ago today. And I guess word had traveled by somebody, and not everybody, but a few people came up and offered their condolences to us. And I tell you that some people say, you ever get over that? And I said, no, you don't ever get over it. There's a day goes by, don't think about it. But you get through it. And as a friend of mine said, you don't have to go through these things with style and grace, you just have to go through them. And when it happened, I got the call at 6 o'clock in the morning from our daughter-in-law screaming hysterically into the phone. First thing I did when I hung up the phone was call an AA friend of mine up where we live, and he was there in 5 minutes. And I said, my wife has gone off on a cruise with a bunch of old ladies. I should rephrase that. Some senior citizen woman from Apple Valley. Anyway, she was due to dock at 8 o'clock that morning and was going to call me. And when the call came at 6, I thought it was her. And I said, how am I going to tell his mother? And he said, put the coffee pot on. So I did. We drank a pot of coffee, and we talked about it and figured it out. And I said, I got to go down there to pick her up in Glendale and then go to my daughter-in-law's house. He said, I'll be back in a few minutes with Sharon. I said, why? He says, we're going with you. And I said, no, Jack, you don't have to do that. Jack's a foot taller than me and 100 pounds heavier, so I said, okay. So they went with us and stayed with me until we met up with them and then went there to my daughter-in-law's, and, you know, the next week we had the thing and came here. And what's important about that for you, if you care, is that anything that happens, good or bad, and I had trouble handling good as well as bad, you get through it with the help of people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I think we got somewhere near 260 cards from different places, Colorado and Florida and wherever. And there were 140 people there with room for 100. And to this day, we have a daughter-in-law that's just not doing well at all. We hope to be supportive as best we can, but there's only so much you can do. And I want to tell you that I don't know, I have, first of all, I don't think I've been in her life at all. I think we've been married 58 years. I don't think it would have lasted 8 if I wouldn't have come here. But you get through it, and you do the best you can with it, and life goes on. And I can't tell you, after saying that in meetings, how many people have come up to me afterwards and said, it happened to me. This is what happened to me. And, you know, we're not alone in this thing. It just, but you keep doing what you're doing, and you don't drink one day at a time, and thank you.
Thank you, Bob.